May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in the sight of God. Amen.
Amen.
I'm Dinah Ferguson, and I am so pleased to have been invited to be in the pulpit with you this morning. It is a gift that sometimes I am given, and I was delighted to get a text message a couple of weeks ago that said, "Would you like to preach on November 12th? Parenthesis, it's convention weekend." I said, "Oh, I remember this. I never preached the Sunday after convention either." But I went and looked at the lessons, and I went, "Oh, yes, I remember this one. This is the parable that says, 'Jesus is coming, look busy.'" So it wasn't as much the Sunday that I was asked to preach, as the lessons for this morning. We're coming to the end of the Pentecost season and the end of the year of Matthew, and Matthew's parables are a little dark. And so how do we hear good news in them? And then, of course, this morning we not only get this parable from Matthew, we get words from the prophet Amos. Fun, weren't they? Did you like those? Sean, how did you like the fact that he doesn't like harps? And who are our torchbearers? He doesn't want processions either. So what are we to do with these lessons? Where do we find good news in what we've been given today? This lesson of the bridesmaids, the gospel of the parable of the bridesmaids, can sometimes be heard as an allegory, and that makes it really tough because it sounds like Jesus is just slamming the door on those poor, foolish bridesmaids. I mean, come on, haven't you forgotten your keys sometimes? And the answer is no, I don't know you. So maybe we don't want to see it as an allegory. Maybe we'd like it to be a metaphor. And where is the oil that doesn't run out? Where do we find that in our lives? Perhaps that's an avenue we could explore. And I'm sure we could. But there was a little point he didn't come on time. He didn't come when he was expected. Now, if you remember about the composition of our Gospels, these stories were told in the community immediately after Jesus' death and resurrection. But they weren't written down until the first saints were beginning to die. And they were worried that these stories would not be carried on. How do we have them for those who come after us? They had expected Jesus in their lifetimes. They didn't expect that they were going to have to wait this long. And as they looked around, they said, "We better write these stories down so that people can know them. Because we don't know the day nor the hour." And so the stories were shared among the people after the first disciples, and for 2,000 years now we have heard these lessons. We have heard these stories, and we have known that we are called to do God's work. In the meantime, we are called to be ready. We are called to be prepared. We are called to do God's work. In the words of Amos, we are called to let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an everlasting stream. But I wonder, after 2,000 years, are we still as expectant as those early disciples were? Are we still truly waiting for Jesus to come? That we all we live in this expectation, what does it mean to us? How are we to let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream? I was at convention this weekend, and we had some wonderful speakers. We had at the sermon at the Eucharist yesterday morning, Dr. Lucy Jones was the preacher. Now, you may have seen her on TV. She's the geologist that tells us what's going on when we have quake somewhere in the world and really settles us down. So she preached for us yesterday morning. She preached as a committed Christian, as someone who is doing the work of God in the world, and she reminded us that the planet needs our care. In creation care that we are called to, as we have been given this world and these creatures to be part of, we are called to justice for the earth. So what might that look like? Well, it might look like replacing your next appliance with something that doesn't pollute the atmosphere. It might look like when the Utilities Commission comes and says to upgrade our grid to support all of the electrical needs that we will have, it's going to cost money. And it might look like not grumbling when they say that for the good of us all and for the good of our planet, can you pitch in? Can you make this a priority? Can you tell people that this is part of what we do to care for our planet? Priest who is an enrolled member of one of the tribes and spoke to us about indigenous ministries, and our own Fetty Chang, who is in the Diocese of Los Angeles and talked to us about Chinese ministries right here. And what they had to say was how we can participate not only in the justice and the righteousness of sharing our life together, but what we are given in return, how mutual this is. That indigenous people bring to us a way of spirituality that can enrich our lives if we will take the time to listen and share with them. That Chinese ministries that happen multilingually show us how we can be together as the people of God even when we don't share a language. How we can remember as we look at our communities that not all Hispanics or Latinos are immigrants. Not all of them are Spanish speaking. How can we welcome people and acknowledge their gifts and bring in and welcome and celebrate their gifts with us? It doesn't necessarily mean that we're speaking Spanish with them or we're starting a Spanish Mass. It means that we are open to that, who they are, and inviting them to come in and share their gifts with us. And the missioner for Black Ministries pointed out to us that in the Episcopal Church, we are facing a drastic decline in the number of African American Episcopalians. And this loss diminishes us all. The vibrancy and vitality of their ministry enriches us, and perhaps we can reach out to our historically Black neighbors, the congregations in our diocese that are historically Black, and to celebrate their ministries with them, to learn about their lives, to be with them and understand what they bring and share to us, and how we are diminished if they are not with us. All of this is work that requires us to keep awake. That's what Jesus told us to do, keep awake. But I think it is only infused with vitality and dynamism when we remember that Christ will come again. Our ministries are focused by that foreknowledge, that understanding that we are not working at the end of times, we are working in the meantime, and we are celebrating and awaiting Christ coming to be with us. I have a painting in my dining room. My husband doesn't like it very much. He thinks it's odd. But I love it because it's kind of this Chagallish angel. She's a stick figure and she's kind of standing on her head and she's very, very colorful. And you have to look hard to see what you're looking at. And there words. It says, some people don't know that there are angels whose only job is to keep us awake so that we don't miss our lives. Keep awake. That's what Jesus calls us to do. And so I wonder this morning if the job of our community here at St. Cross, our larger community in the diocese, our community as part of the Anglican Communion, our community as people of God, is not the angel that helps to keep us awake so that we do not miss our lives. We are called to keep awake, to do the work that God calls us to do, to make sure that wherever we are and however we live in the knowledge that Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. And in living that life, we celebrate the fact that God, the angels, and each and every one of us keeps us awake to do the work of God in the world. Amen.